I should have brought you flowers, murmured Elizabeth. Alice said suddenly, You're married!
Pardon?
Alice picked up Elizabeth's left hand. You've got an engagement ring. It's gorgeous.
That's exactly the sort of ring I would have got if we'd got to choose our own ring. Not that I don't love Granny Love's ring, of course.
Elizabeth said dryly, You hate and despise Granny Love's ring, Alice.
Oh, did I tell you that? I don't remember telling you that.
Years ago, I think you might have had too much to drink. That's why I don't understand why...
Well, anyway.
Alice said, Well, are you going to keep me in suspense? Who did you marry? Was it that cute town planner?
Dean? No, I didn't marry Dean. And I only went out with him for 5 minutes. Also, he died. In a scuba diving accident. Tragic.
Anyway, I married Ben.
You don't remember Ben? He's looking after your children at the moment.
Oh, that's nice of him.
Good, said Alice weakly and felt sick again, because presumably a good mother would immediately have checked on who was looking after her children. The problem was that it still seemed preposterous that they existed. She pressed a hand to her flat stomach where there was no longer a baby and fought that feeling of vertigo. If she let herself think too much about this, she might start screaming and not be able to stop.
Ben, said Alice, focusing on Elizabeth.
So you married someone called Ben?
She remembered hearing that snuffly child say, Uncle Ben, on the phone. It was somehow worse when things clicked together, as if everything in the world made sense except for Alice.
She said, It's funny, I was thinking earlier today that the only Ben I knew was this huge neon sign designer I met once at Nick's sister's shop. I always remembered that guy because he was so big and slow and silent. It was like a giant grizzly bear had been turned into a man.
Elizabeth burst out laughing, and the sound of her laugh, it was a full-throated, generous laugh that always made you want to say the funny thing again. And the way she tipped back her head made her seem like her proper self again.
I don't get it, Alice smiled, ready to get it.
That's the Ben I married. I met him at the opening of Dora's shop. We've been married 8 years.
Really? Elizabeth married that huge, grisly neon sign designer? She normally went for terribly witty, successful corporate types who made Alice feel stupid.
But didn't he have a beard?
Surely Elizabeth wouldn't have married someone with a beard.
Elizabeth shook with laughter. Yep, he's still got it.
And does he still design neon signs?
Yes, beautiful ones.
My favorite is the one for Rob's Ribs and Rumps in Kalara. It came in second in the annual Neon Design Awards last year.
Alice looked at her sharply, but she seemed perfectly serious.
She said, So, he's my brother-in-law. So, I guess I know him. I know him pretty well.
Does Nick get on with him?
Do we all go out together?
Elizabeth paused and Alice couldn't read the expression on her face. Then she said, Years ago, before Ben and I were married, when Madison was a toddler and you were just pregnant with Tom, we got a house together at Jervis Bay one Easter. It was right on Hyams Beach, you know, whitest sand in the world. And the weather was perfect, and Madison was so cute. We were all just in love with her. We played stupid card games like Cheat, and one night, Nick and Ben got drunk and danced to 80s music. Ben never dances. That might have been the only time I've seen him dance. They were being so stupid. We were just rolling around laughing so much we woke Madison up and she got out of bed and danced with them in her PJs. Actually, that was a really special holiday. It makes me feel so nostalgic. I haven't thought about it in ages.
I don't remember a thing about it, said Alice. It seemed so cruel that she couldn't remember such a wonderful holiday, as if some other Alice had got to live her life in her place.
Elizabeth's tone changed abruptly. It's amazing you don't remember Ben. There was something almost aggressive in her voice, and she was looking sharply at Alice as if daring her to say something.
You saw him just yesterday. He came over to help you with your car. You baked him his favorite banana muffins. You had quite a chat.
So, said Alice nervously, we have a car now.
Yes, you do, Alice.
And I make banana muffins?
Elizabeth smiled. Low-fat, high-fiber, but surprisingly delicious. Alice's mind jumped about feverishly, this way and that, until she felt dizzy. From those three strange children sitting in a row, to banana muffins, to a car. She didn't like cars. She liked buses, the ferry. Also, she wasn't the best driver. To Elizabeth marrying a neon sign designer called Ben. She seized on a sudden hurtful thought. Hey, you must have had a wedding without me. Alice loved weddings. She would never forget a wedding. Alice, you were my matron of honor, and Madison was flower girl. You had matching dresses the color of a Singapore orchid. You made a funny speech, and you and Nick made a spectacle of yourselves dancing to Come On Eileen. You gave us a blender. Oh, frustration welled up in her. But I just can't believe I don't remember any of this. It doesn't even sound familiar. She stuck her fingers through the holes in the blanket over her legs and bunched it together hard with both hands in a silly childish movement. There is so much stuff. Hey there. Elizabeth rubbed Alice's shoulder a bit too vigorously as if she were a boxer and looked around her feverishly for help. You've got to let me go and find a doctor to talk to about this. She was a problem solver, Elizabeth. She always wanted to find a solution for you. There was a burst of screechy female laughter from the cubicle next to them. You didn't.
I did.
Alice and Elizabeth raised their eyebrows at each other in mutual silent distaste, and Alice was filled with soothing, sisterly affection. She let go of the blanket and managed to pull her hand sedately back in her lap. Please don't go. A nurse will come along and check on me soon, and you can talk to her. Just stay here and keep talking to me. I think that will cure me. Elizabeth glanced at her watch and said, I don't know about that. But she sat back in her chair. Alice shifted herself against the pillows behind her back to get comfortable. She thought about asking more questions about the children in the photo. Three! The number was so unwieldy and impossible. But it was so surreal it was silly, like a movie that was so far-fetched you kept shifting in your seat and trying not to guffaw. It was better to ask about Elizabeth's life. Elizabeth had her head bent, scratching at something invisible on her wrist. Alice looked again at the lines that seemed to pull her sister's mouth down into a sad sort of grimace. Was it just age? Did her own mouth turn down like that too? Soon she would look. Soon. But it was more than that. There was a deep, slumping sort of sadness about her. Was she not happy being married to that grizzly bear man? Was it possible to love a man with a beard? Childish. Of course it was possible, even if it was a remarkably bushy beard. As Alice watched, Elizabeth's throat moved as she swallowed convulsively. What are you thinking about? Asked Alice. Elizabeth started and looked up. I don't know. Nothing. She swallowed a yawn. Sorry, I'm just tired. I only got a couple of hours sleep last night. Ah, said Alice. She didn't need an explanation. She and Elizabeth had both suffered from bouts of terrible insomnia all their lives. They had inherited it from their mother. After their dad died, Alice and Elizabeth would often stay up right through the night with their mother, sitting in their dressing gowns in a row on the couch, watching videos and drinking cocoa. And then they'd sleep the next day away while sunlight streamed through the muffled sleeping house. How has my insomnia been lately? Asked Alice. I don't know, actually. I don't know if you still get it. You don't know? Alice was baffled. They always kept each other up to date with their insomnia battles. But don't we talk? Of course we talk, but I guess you're pretty busy with the kids and everything, so our conversations are maybe a bit rushed. Busy, repeated Alice. She didn't like the sound of that at all. She had always had a slight mistrust of busy people. The sort of people who describe themselves as flat-out frantic. What was the hurry? Why didn't they slow down? Just what exactly were they so busy doing? Well, she said, and felt unaccountably awkward. It felt like things weren't exactly right between herself and Elizabeth. There seemed to be a sort of stilted, friendly politeness, as if they were good friends who didn't see each other so often anymore. She would ask Nick about it. It was one of the best things about him. He liked to talk about people, study them, and work them out. He was interested in the complexities of relationships. Also, he loved Elizabeth. And when he made fun of her or complained about her, because she could sometimes be profoundly annoying, he did it in just the right brotherly way so that Alice didn't feel she had to defend her. Alice looked at Elizabeth's beautifully cut cream suit. Both their wardrobes seemed to have improved in 2008, and said, "Are you still working at the catalogue place, the treasure chest?" Elizabeth had a job writing the text for a huge monthly mail-order catalogue called The Treasure Chest. She had to find clever, persuasive things to say about hundreds and hundreds of products. Anything from banana-flavored lip gloss to an instant egg poacher, to a waterproof radio you could play in the shower. She got a lot of free stuff to give away, which was nice. And every month when the catalogue came out, everyone in the family read out their favorite lines to Elizabeth. Franny kept every issue of The Treasure Chest on proud display and made her friends read it when they came to visit. "Oh, that feels like such a long time ago," said Elizabeth. She looked at Alice and shook her head slightly as if she'd never seen anything quite like it. "You're like a time traveler. You really are." "So I guess you don't work there anymore." Alice felt irritable. This was going to get tiring if everyone looked at her with awe each time she asked a simple question. How much could have changed in 10 years? It seemed like everything. "The Treasure Chest is a website now," said Elizabeth, "and I stopped working there about 6 years ago. I worked for an agency for about 4 years, and then 2 years ago I started running these training seminars on how to write direct mail, or junk mail, as most people would call it. They're quite successful, actually, as strange as that may seem. Anyway, it pays the bills. I was running one today when I got the call from Jane about you." "So it's your own business?" "Yes." "Wow, that's so impressive. You're a success story. I always knew you would be a success story. Can I come along and watch you?"
"Come along and watch. Watch me," Elizabeth snorted.
"Oh, I guess I've already done that, have I?" Elizabeth said, "No, Alice, you've never shown the slightest interest in coming along to one of my seminars." Her voice had that sharp edge again. "Oh," said Alice, confused. "That seems... well, I wonder why not." Elizabeth sighed. "You're just really busy, Alice, that's all." There was that busy word again. "And also, I think you find my whole choice of career maybe a bit... tacky."
"Tacky? I said that?
I said that about you? I would never say that." Alice was horrified. Had she turned into a nasty person who judged people by their choice of career? She'd always been proud of Elizabeth. She was the smart one, the one who was going places, while Alice stayed safely put. Elizabeth said, "No, no, you never actually said that. You probably don't even think it. Just forget I said that." Maybe, thought Alice fearfully, the other Alice who has been living my life for the past 10 years isn't very nice. Alice said, "Well, what about me? What do I do for a job?" Alice had worked as an administrative assistant in the pay office at ABR. She didn't love it or hate it. It was just a job. She wasn't especially interested in a career.
"You're such a domestic goddess. You're like a 1950s housewife," Elizabeth had once said to her, when Alice admitted that she'd just spent the most blissful day gardening, making new curtains for the kitchen, and baking a chocolate cake for Nick.
"You don't work." Elizabeth gave her an inscrutable look.
"Oh, well, that sounds good," said Alice happily.
"You're very busy, though."
What was it with that word? "You do a lot of stuff at the school."
"The school? What school?" "The children's school." "Oh, them. The three scary little strangers."
"Franny," said Alice suddenly. "What about Franny? She hasn't got sick or anything, has she?"
She didn't want to even say the word died. "She's fine," said Elizabeth. "Full of beans." The silver mobile phone sitting on the cabinet next to Alice's bed burst into life.
"It must be Nick at last!" Alice lunged for the phone. "Oh," Elizabeth jumped to her feet. "Let me talk to him first."
"No way!" Alice held the phone away from her, irritated. "Why?" Without waiting for an answer, she pressed the green button and held the phone to her ear.
"Hello?"
"Yeah, hi, it's me."
It was Nick.
Alice felt blissful relief running straight through her bloodstream like a shot of brandy.
What's happened?
His voice was deeper, rougher than usual, as if he had a cold.
Is it one of the kids?
So Nick knew about the kids, too. Everyone knew about the kids.
Elizabeth was jumping up and down, waving her arms about, gesturing for the phone. Alice poked her tongue out at her.
No, it's me, said Alice. There was so much to tell him, she didn't know where to start. I fell over at the, gym with Jane Turner and hit my head. I was unconscious. They had to call an ambulance. Oh, and I was sick in the lift all over this guy's shoes, so embarrassing. And wait till I tell you about this bike riding class. So funny. Hey, you're in Portugal. I can't believe you're in Portugal. What's it like?
There was so much to tell him, she felt like she hadn't seen him in years. When he got back from Portugal, they would have to go out for dinner at that Mexican restaurant they liked, and talk, talk, talk. They would have margaritas. She could drink again now that she wasn't pregnant anymore. Oh, she yearned to be in that restaurant with him right now, sitting in a dark corner booth, his thumb caressing her palm. There was silence on the other end of the phone. He must be in shock.
But I'm not badly hurt, Alice reassured him. It's not serious. I'll be fine. I feel fine.
He said, Then why the fuck did I need to call you?
Alice felt her head snap back as if she'd been hit. Nick had never, ever spoken to her like that before, not even when they were fighting. He was meant to fix the nightmare, not make it worse.
Nick, there was a tremor in her voice. She was going to be so mad with him later about this. Her feelings were extremely hurt. What's the matter?
Is there some sort of strategy to all this? Because I'm not getting it. And to be frank, I don't have time for it. You don't want to change any of the arrangements for the weekend, do you? Is that what this is about? Or for Christ's sake, tell me it's not something to do with Christmas Day again. Is it?
Why are you talking to me like that? Said Alice. Her heart raced. This was more terrifying than anything that had happened to her today.
What did I do?
Oh, for God's sake, I don't have time for fucking games at the moment, he was shouting.
He was actually shouting at her, and she was in hospital.
Paprika, whispered Alice. You have to wash your mouth out with paprika, Nick.
Elizabeth stood up. Give it here, she ordered. She removed the phone from Alice's trembling fingers, put the phone to her ear, and pressed a finger to her other ear. She turned her face away from Alice and dropped her chin. Nick, it's Elizabeth. This is actually quite serious. She's had a bad head injury and she's lost her memory. She's forgotten everything since 1998. Do you understand what I'm saying? Everything.
Alice let her head fall back against the pillow and breathed shallow gasps of air.
What did it mean?
Elizabeth paused, listening, her forehead furrowed. Yes, yes, I understand, but she doesn't actually remember any of that. Another pause.
They're with Ben. He's taken them to their swimming lesson, and I guess we'll stay over with them tonight. And then...
Pause.
Yes, okay, and then your mum can pick them up exactly as per the arrangements, and I'm sure by Sunday night Alice should be back on her feet and everything will be back to normal.
Pause.
No, I haven't talked to a doctor yet, but I will soon.
Pause.
Right. Okay, well, do you want me to put Alice back on?
Alice held her hand up for the phone. Surely Nick would be himself again now.
But Elizabeth said, Oh, okay. Well, bye, Nick.
She hung up.
Alice said, He didn't want to talk to me? He actually didn't want to talk to me?
She could feel stabbing pains all over her body, a long, witchy finger poking her cruelly. Elizabeth clicked the phone shut and put her hand on Alice's arm. She said gently, You'll remember soon. It's okay. It's just that you and Nick aren't together anymore.
Alice felt a sensation of everything around her plummeting toward the central point of Elizabeth's moving lips. She focused on those lips. Raspberry lipstick with a darker line around the edge. Elizabeth must use lip liner. Fancy that. She must line her lips.
What was she saying? She could not be saying. What? Said Alice.
Elizabeth said again, You're getting divorced.
Well, fancy that.
Chapter 8.
Alice had one glass of champagne with her bridesmaids while they were getting their makeup done, another half a glass in the limo, 3 1/4 glasses at the wedding reception, including strawberries, and another glass sitting up with Nick on the king-size bed in their hotel room that night. So she was somewhat sozzled, but that was no problem, because she was the bride, and it was her wedding day, and everyone had said she looked beautiful. And so this was a beautiful, romantic drunkenness that would probably not result in a hangover. "Do you love and adore my wedding dress?" she asked Nick for what could have been the third time, as she ran her hand across its rich, lustrous fabric. It was called Ivory Silk Duchess Satin, and touching it gave her the same sensuously satisfied feeling as when she was a little girl and she used to run her finger over the plush pink lining of her music box. Except this was even better, because back then she really wanted to be in the music box, rolling around on pink satin. "I love my wedding dress. It sort of looks like golden magical ice cream, doesn't it? Couldn't you just eat it?" "Normally I'd tuck in," said Nick, "but I'm full of cake. I had 3 pieces. "That was outstanding cake. Everyone will be talking about the cake at our wedding for years to come. Most wedding cake is boring, but our cake? I am so proud of our cake. I didn't make the cake, but I'm proud of it." It seemed Nick had drunk quite a bit of champagne too. Alice set her glass on the bedside table and lay down on her back with a rich rustle of fabric. Nick slid down beside her. He'd taken off his tie and undone the buttons of his white dinner shirt. He had the beginnings of a 5 o'clock shadow and slightly bloodshot eyes, but his hair was still perfect with a ridge-like wave at the part. Alice touched it and pulled her hand back. "It feels like straw." "The sisters," explained Nick, "armed with gel." He stroked her hair and said, "That's a nice synthetic feel you've got going there, wife." "Hairspray. A lot of hairspray, husband." "Is that right, wife?"
"Yes, it is, husband."
"How interesting, wife. Are we going to talk like this forever, husband?"
"No way, wife."
They looked up at the ceiling and said nothing.
"What about Ella's speech?" said Alice.
"I think it was meant to be touching."
"Ah. Oh. What about your Aunt Watsy's dress?"
"I think it was meant to be, stylish."
"Ah."
They snickered quietly. Alice rolled onto her side and said, "Imagine," and her eyes filled with tears. She always got emotional when she drank too much champagne.
"Imagine if we never met."
"It was fated," said Nick. "So we would have met the next day."
"But I don't believe in fate,"
whimpered Alice, reveling in the luxurious feeling of hot, wet tears rolling down her cheeks. Those triple coats of mascara would be streaked all over her face. It seemed truly frightening that it was only by sheer chance that she had met Nick. It could so easily not have happened, and then she would have had a shadowy, half-alive existence, like some sort of woodland creature who never sees sunlight, never even knowing how much she could love and how much she could be loved. Elizabeth once said, very definitely and severely, that the right man didn't complete you, you have to find happiness yourself. And Alice nodded agreeably while thinking to herself, "Oh, but yes, he does."
"If we'd never met," continued Alice, "then today would be just like any other day, and right now we'd be watching television in separate homes, and I'd be wearing tracksuit pants, and we wouldn't be going on a honeymoon tomorrow."
The full horror of what could have been struck her.
"We'd be going to work. Work!"
"Come here, my darling inebriated bride." Nick pulled Alice to him so that her head was resting beneath his shoulder, and she breathed in the scent of his aftershave. It was much stronger than usual. He must have slept on extra that morning, and the thought of him doing that was so unbearably sweet, it made her cry even harder. He said, "The important point here is this. Wait for it. It's a very important and intelligent point. You ready?"
"Yes."
"We did meet."
"Yes," conceded Alice. "We did meet."
"So it all turned out okay."
"That's true," sniffed Alice. "It all turned out okay."
it all turned out okay. And then they had both fallen into a deep, exhausted sleep, with Alice's ivory silk Duchess satin wedding dress whirled all over them, and a single red dot of confetti stuck to the side of Nick's face, which would leave a red circle that would stay there for the first 3 days of their honeymoon.
"We must have just had a bad argument," said Alice to Elizabeth. "We're not actually divorcing. We would never divorce."
That word, divorce, was so ugly, her lips pursed together like a fish on the second syllable. Divorce. No, not them. Never ever them. Nick's parents divorced when he was a child. He remembered everything about it. Whenever they heard about a couple divorcing, even a trashy, laughable celebrity couple, Nick always said, sadly, like an Irish grandma, "Oh, that's a shame." He believed in marriage. He felt that people gave up on their relationships too easily. He once said to Alice that if they were ever having troubles in their marriage, he would move heaven and earth to fix things. Alice couldn't take it seriously because heaven and earth wouldn't need to be moved. Any troubles in their relationship could always be fixed with a few hours in separate rooms, a hug in the hallway, a quiet sliding of a chocolate bar under an elbow, or even just a gentle, meaningful poke in the ribs that meant, "Let's stop fighting now." Divorce was like a phobia for Nick, his only phobia. If this were true, then he would be devastated, crushed. The thing he feared most had happened. Her heart broke for him. "Did we have a really bad argument about something?" Alice asked Elizabeth. She would get to the bottom of it. She would put a stop to it. "I don't think it's just one argument. I guess it's probably a whole lot of little issues, but to be honest, you haven't really told me that much about it. You just rang me the day after Nick moved out and said..."
"He moved out? He actually moved out of the house?"
It was mind-boggling. She tried to visualize how it could actually happen. Nick throwing stuff into a suitcase, slamming the door behind him. A yellow taxicab waiting outside. It would have to be yellow, like an American cab, because this could not be real. This was a scene from a movie with a heart-wrenching soundtrack. This was not her life. "Alice, you've been separated for 6 months. But, you know, once you get your memory back, you'll realize it's okay. Because you're fine with this. This is what you want. I asked you last week, I said, 'Are you sure this is what you want?' And you said, 'Absolutely sure. This marriage was dead and buried a long time ago.'"
Liar, liar, pants on fire. That could not be true. That had to be a fabrication.
Alice tried to keep the rage out of her voice.
"You're just making that up to make me feel better, aren't you?" "I would never say that. Dead and buried? That doesn't even sound like me. I don't talk like that. Please don't make stuff up. This is hard enough."
"Oh, Alice," said Elizabeth sadly. "I promise you, it's just your head injury. It's just..." "Oh, hi there. Hi." A nurse Alice hadn't seen before pulled back the curtain briskly on their cubicle, and Elizabeth greeted her with obvious relief.
"How are you feeling?"
The nurse pumped up the blood pressure strap around Alice's arm once again.
"I'm fine," said Alice resignedly.
She knew the drill now. Blood pressure, pupils, questions.
"Your blood pressure has soared from the last time I checked," commented the nurse, making a note on her chart. "My husband just yelled at me like I was his worst enemy. My lovely Nick. My Nick. I want to tell him about it because he'd be so angry if he ever heard somebody speak to me like that. He's the first person I want to tell when somebody upsets me, my foot pressing on the accelerator, desperate to get home from work just to tell him. The moment I tell him, the moment his face lights up with fury on my behalf, it's better. It's fixed. Nick, you will never believe how this man spoke to me. You will want to punch him in the nose when you hear. Except it's so strange, because it was you, Nick. You were the man."
"She's had a few shocks," said Elizabeth.
"We really need you to try and stay relaxed."
The nurse leaned close and did something feathery quick with her fingers to pull back Alice's eyelids, while she shone her miniature torch into each pupil. The nurse's perfume reminded Alice of something. Someone? But of course, the feeling vanished as soon as the nurse moved. Was this going to be her from now on?
A permanent, irritating case of déjà vu like an itchy rash? Now I'm just going to ask you a few boring questions again. What's your name?
Alice Mary Love.
And where are you and what are you doing here?
I'm at Royal North Shore Hospital because I hit my head at the gym.
And what day is it?
It's Friday, 2nd of May, 2008.
Good. Excellent. The nurse turned to Elizabeth as if expecting her to be impressed.
We're just checking that her cognitive reasoning isn't affected by her injury.
Elizabeth blinked irritably. Yes, okay, great, but she still thinks it's 1998.
Tattletale, thought Alice.
I do not, she said. I know it's 2008. I just said that. But she still doesn't remember anything since 1998, or hardly anything. She doesn't remember her children. She doesn't remember her marriage breakup.
Her marriage breakup. Her marriage was something that could be sliced up like a pizza. Alice closed her eyes and thought of Nick's face, creased from sleep, lying on the pillow next to hers on a Sunday morning. Sometimes in the morning, his hair would be all spiked up in the middle of his head.
You've got a mohawk,
said Alice the first time she observed this phenomenon.
Of course, he said. It's Sunday. Mohawk day.
Even with his eyes closed, he knew when she was awake, lying there looking at him, thinking hopefully that he might bring her a cup of tea in bed.
No,
he would say before she'd even ask.
Don't even think about it, woman.
But he always got it for her. Alice would give anything, anything at all, to be lying in bed right now with Nick, waiting for a cup of tea. Maybe he got sick of making her cups of tea. Was that it? Had she taken him for granted? Who did she think she was, some sort of princess lying in bed waiting for cups of tea to be delivered, without even brushing her teeth? She wasn't pretty enough to get away with that sort of behavior. She should have jumped up before he woke, done her hair and makeup, and made him pancakes and strawberries, wearing a long, lacy nightgown. That was how you kept a marriage alive, for God's sake. It wasn't as if there wasn't enough advice around in every woman's magazine she'd ever read. It was basic knowledge. She felt as though she'd been unforgivably negligent, careless, sloppy, with the most precious, wonderful gift she'd ever received. Alice could hear Elizabeth murmuring urgently to the nurse, asking if she could see a doctor, wanting to know what tests had been done.
How do you know she hasn't got some sort of clot in her brain?
Elizabeth's voice rose a bit hysterically and Alice smiled to herself. Drama queen. Although, could there be a clot? A dark, ominous thing swooping around in her head like an evil bat? Yes, they really should look into that. Maybe Nick had got bored with her. Was that it? Once when she was in high school, she overheard a girl saying, "Oh, Alice, she's okay, but she's a nothing sort of person." A nothing sort of person. The girl had said it so casually, without malice, as if it were a fact. And at 14, Alice had felt cold with the official confirmation of what she'd always believed. Yes, of course she was boring. She bored herself silly. Other people's personalities were so much more substantial. That same year, a boy at the bowling alley leaned in close with the sweet smell of coke on his breath and said, "You've got a face like a pig." And that just confirmed something else she'd always suspected. Her mother was wrong when she said her nose was as cute as a button. It wasn't a nose, it was a snout. The boy had a skinny, tiny-eyed face like a rat. She was 25 before it occurred to her that she could have insulted him back. But the rule of life was that the boys got to decide which girls were pretty. It didn't really matter how ugly they were themselves. Maybe Nick had been bringing her a cup of tea one morning, and all of a sudden a veil lifted from his eyes and he thought, "Hey, wait a second. How did I end up married to this lazy girl with her boring, nothing personality and pig-like face?" Oh, Lord. Were all those terrible insecurities really so fresh and close to the surface? She was grown up. She was 29. It was only recently that she'd been walking home from the hairdresser's feeling gorgeous, and a gaggle of teenage girls walked by, and the sound of their strident giggles made her send a message back through time to her 14-year-old self. "Don't worry, it all works out. You get a personality, you get a job, you work out what to do with your hair, and you get a boy who thinks you're beautiful."
She'd felt so together, as if all the teenaged angst and failed relationships before Nick had all been part of a perfectly acceptable plan that was leading to this moment, when she would be 29 years old, and everything would finally be just as it should be. 39. Not 29. She was 39. And that day with the teenagers must have been 10 years ago. Elizabeth came back in and sat down next to Alice. She's going to try and get the doctor to come around again. Apparently, that's a very big deal, because you're just under observation now, and the doctor is extremely busy, but she's going to see what she can do. So, I think our chances are probably zero. Alice said, "Please tell me it's not true, about Nick." "Oh, Alice. Because I love him. I properly love him. I love him so much." "You did love him." "No, I do. Right now. I know I still do." Elizabeth made a tisk sound that was full of sympathy and lifted her hands in a hopeless sort of gesture. "When you get your memory back..." "But we're so happy," interrupted Alice frantically, trying to make Elizabeth see. "It's not even possible to be happier." Tears slid helplessly down the sides of her face and trickled ticklishly into her ears. "What happened? Did he fall in love with somebody else? Is that it?" Surely not. It was impossible. Nick's love for Alice was a fact. A fact. You were allowed to take facts for granted. Once a friend was teasing Nick for agreeing to go with Alice to a musical, although he actually quite liked musicals. "I can see the thumbprint between your eyes," the friend said, and Nick shrugged. "Mate, what can I do? I love her more than oxygen." Sure, he'd been drinking a lot of beer, but he said that in a pub when he was trying to be blokey. He loved her more than oxygen. So what, the boy didn't need oxygen anymore? Elizabeth put the back of her hand to Alice's forehead and stroked her hair. "He didn't meet anyone else, as far as I know. And you're right. You were happy together, and you did have a wonderful, special relationship. I remember it. But things change. People change. It just happens. It's just life. The fact that you're getting a divorce doesn't change the fact that you had all those wonderful times. And I swear to you that once you get your memory back, you'll be fine with this." "No," Alice shut her eyes. "No, I won't. I don't want to be fine with it." As Elizabeth continued to stroke her forehead, Alice remembered the day from her childhood when she'd been dropped home after a birthday party, still fizzing from winning the Simon Says competition. She was carrying a balloon and a basket made of shiny cardboard and filled with lollies. Elizabeth had met her at the front door and ordered, "Come with me." Alice trotted along behind her, ready for whatever new game Elizabeth must have organized, and ready to share the lollies, but not the Fritto Frogs. She loved Fritto Frogs. And as they walked past the living room, her balloon bobbing along behind her, she noticed that it seemed to be full of strange grown-ups surrounding her mum, who was sitting on the couch with her head rested back on the couch at a strange angle. Odd, but maybe she had a headache. Alice didn't call out to her because she didn't want to have to talk to all the strange grown-ups, and she followed Elizabeth down the hallway to her bedroom, where Elizabeth said, "I have to tell you something that is going to make you feel very bad, so I think you should get in your pajamas and get into bed and be ready for it so it won't hurt so much." Alice didn't say, "What? What is it? Tell me now," because she was 6 and nothing bad had ever happened to her. And besides which, she always did what Elizabeth said. So she was perfectly happy to put on her pajamas while Elizabeth went to fill up a hot water bottle and put it in a pillow slip so it wouldn't burn. She also brought along a spoonful of honey, the Vicks vapor rub, and half an aspirin and a glass of water. These were all things their mother did when they were sick, and Alice loved being sick. Once Elizabeth had tucked her in bed and had rubbed the Vicks on her chest, she started stroking back the hair off Alice's forehead, just like their mum did when either of them had an especially bad stomach ache. And Alice had closed her eyes and enjoyed all the good parts of being sick without the actual sick feeling. Then Elizabeth said, "Now I have to tell you the bad thing. It's going to give you a bad surprise feeling, so be ready for it, okay? You can suck your thumb if you want." Alice had opened her eyes and frowned because she did not suck her thumb anymore, except for when she'd had an extremely bad day, and even then it was just the very tip, hardly the whole thumb. Then Elizabeth said, "Daddy has died." Alice could never remember what happened next, or even how she felt on hearing the words. All she remembered was how Elizabeth had tried so hard to protect her from the bad, surprised feeling. She was 24 before it occurred to her with a jolt of surprise that Elizabeth had been only a little girl herself that day. She'd phoned her to talk about it, to thank her, and the funny thing was that Elizabeth had an entirely different set of memories about when their dad died and didn't even remember putting Alice to bed. Of course, there was also the time Elizabeth had thrown a pair of nail scissors at her, which got impaled in the back of her neck, but still. Now Alice opened her eyes and said to Elizabeth, "You're such a good big sister." Elizabeth took her hand away and said flatly, "No, I'm not." Neither of them said anything for a few seconds, and then Alice said, "Are you happy, Libby? Because you seem..." Desperately unhappy, she wanted to say, "I'm fine." Elizabeth seemed to be thinking of things to say and then discarding them. "Just be your proper self," Alice wanted to scream. Finally, Elizabeth said, "I guess maybe our lives haven't turned out quite the way we envisaged they would when we were 30. A voice interrupted them. "At last, I found you! I thought I'd never find you!" There was a woman standing at the end of the bed, her face hidden for a moment as she ceremoniously held up a large bunch of yellow tulips. She lowered the tulips and revealed her face. Alice blinked and blinked again in disbelief. Chapter 9 "Mum?" said Alice. It was Alice's mother standing at the end of her bed, but this was an extraordinarily different Barb Jones from the one Alice knew. For a start, and there were so many possible places to start, her hair was no longer short and brown, the humble, nun-like hairstyle that she'd had for as long as Alice could remember. Instead, it was a rich mahogany colour and long, falling past her shoulders, with two strands pulled back on either side of her face, so her pixie ears stuck out comically, and pinned at the top with a huge, jaunty, tropical silk flower. Her mother... Her unassuming, fade-into-the-background mother, who normally wore only an apologetic smear of the mildest pink Avon lipstick, was wearing what could only be described as theatrical makeup. Her lips were the same mahogany as her hair, her eyelids were purple, her cheeks were bright, her foundation was thick and too dark, and were those, surely not, false eyelashes? She was wearing a halter-neck, glittery sequined top, pulled in tight at the waist with a big black belt and a full scarlet skirt. Alice lifted her chin and saw the outfit was complete with fishnet stockings and high, strappy shoes. Her mother said, "Are you all right, darling? I always said those spin classes were too hard on your joints, and now look what's happened." "Are you going to a fancy dress party?" asked Alice with sudden inspiration. That would explain it, although even that would be amazing. "Oh, no, silly. We were doing a demonstration at the school when Elizabeth left the message. I came straight here without stopping to change. I do get a few stares, but I'm used to that now. Anyway, enough of that. Tell me what happened and what the doctors are saying. You're as white as a sheet." Her mother sat on the side of the bed and patted her leg. Sparkly bracelets slid up and down her arm. Was Mum tanned? Did Mum have cleavage? "A demonstration of what?" asked Alice. She couldn't take her eyes off this exotic creature. It was Mum, but not Mum. Unlike Elizabeth, she didn't have any new wrinkles. In fact, that thick layer of makeup smoothed out her face, so she seemed younger. Elizabeth said, "Alice has lost a huge chunk of her memory, Mum. She doesn't remember anything since 1998. "Oh," said Barb. "I don't like the sound of that at all." "I knew she looked too pale. You must have a concussion, I suppose. Don't fall asleep. You have to stay awake after a concussion. Whatever you do, Alice darling, you must not fall asleep." "That's a myth," said Elizabeth. "They don't advise that anymore."
Well, I don't know about that, actually, because I think I read something in the Reader's Digest quite recently about a little boy. A boy called Andy, and he hit his head riding one of those mini bikes out in the bush, which is exactly what happened to Sandra's grandson, and I can tell you I would not be letting Tom on one of those, Alice, even though I bet the little devil would love it, because they're terribly dangerous even if you do wear a helmet, which this little boy, this Andy, was not. I think it was Andy. Could have been Arnie. Although that's a funny old-fashioned name you don't hear much these days. Mum, Alice interrupted, knowing there was no way out of the Andy-Arnie labyrinth. Her mother had always been a pathological chatterbox, although normally when she was out in public like this, she would lower her voice in irritating deference to those around her, so you'd always be saying, "Speak up, Mum." If someone she hadn't known intimately for at least 20 years turned up, her chatter would stop instantly, mid-sentence, like a switched-off radio, and she would duck her head, avoid all eye contact, and smile an infuriatingly humble smile. She was so shy that when Alice and Elizabeth were at school, she became literally sick with nerves before their parent-teacher nights and would come home white and trembly with exhaustion, barely able to remember a word any of the teachers had said, as if the point of it had just been to show up, not to actually listen, which always drove Elizabeth insane, because she wanted to hear all the nice things the teachers said about her. Alice didn't care because she knew most of her teachers probably didn't know who she was, because she suffered from the same shyness. Now Alice's mother was talking at a normal volume, actually even a little louder than strictly necessary, and she wasn't darting cautious looks around to make sure any important strangers weren't about to turn up. Also, she seemed to have developed a new way of holding her head, her chin jutting and her neck strained like a peacock. It reminded Alice of somebody, somebody she was sure she hadn't forgotten, someone she knew perfectly well, although she couldn't temporarily name that person. "But I still don't understand why you're dressed like that, Mum," said Alice. "You look incredible." Elizabeth's homework for Dr. Hodges. I was thinking to myself, please don't mention Roger's name, Mum. She can't take another shock. Her brain might explode. Well, as I said, darling, Roger and I were doing a salsa dancing demonstration up at the school when Elizabeth left the message. I got such a shock when I heard. Did you say salsa dancing? You can't possibly have forgotten our salsa dancing. I'll tell you why, because you actually described our last performance as unforgettable. It was just last Wednesday night. We had Olivia up on the floor with us. Of course we couldn't convince Madison and Tom to have a go, or you, for that matter. Roger was quite disappointed, but I tried to explain that... "Roger," said Alice. "Who is Roger?" Elizabeth's homework for Dr. Hodges. Who was I kidding? It's not like she ever goes more than 5 minutes without mentioning Roger's name. "Yes, Roger, of course. Now, you can't have forgotten Roger, can you?" Her mother looked frightened and said to Elizabeth, "This is quite serious, isn't it?" I knew she looked too pale. She's literally bleached of colour. Alice was trying to think of other names that sounded like Roger. Rod? Robert? Her mother had a habit of getting people's names just slightly wrong, so that Jamie became Johnny, Susan became Susanna, and so on. "The only Roger I know is Nick's dad," said Alice, with a little laugh because Nick's dad was a little laughable. Her mother stared at her. She looked like a doll with those spiky black eyelashes. "Well, that's the Roger I'm talking about, darling. My husband Roger."
"Your husband?"
"Oh, give me strength," sighed Elizabeth. Alice turned to her.
"Mum married Roger?"
"I'm afraid so."
"But Roger? Really?"
"Yep, really." So here was another wedding that the other Alice had attended in her place. But this was a wedding Alice couldn't even begin to envisage. For one thing, her mother had always refused to consider the possibility of dating other men. "Oh, I'm too old for that," she'd say. "You need to be young and pretty to date. And besides, you only have one love of your life, and that was your father. How could any man ever measure up to him?" And although Elizabeth and Alice had continually tried to convince her that she was still young and attractive,
and that Dad would never have expected her to mourn him forever, Alice had been secretly proud of her mother's devotion. It was sort of beautiful and moving, even though it was also annoying because it meant Alice and Elizabeth were responsible for her entire social life. So, okay, fine, she'd overcome her fear of dating. And probably that's what it had been, rather than eternal devotion. But to marry Nick's father of all people?
But why? Said Alice helplessly. Why would you marry Roger?
That's right, she thought. It's Roger who has that peacock way of holding his head. Barb widened her eyes and pursed her lips together coyly, with an expression that was so bizarrely unlike her that Alice had to avert her eyes as if she'd interrupted her mother doing something perverse and sexual. She said,
I fell madly in love with him. You remember? Of course you remember. It all started at Madison's christening, when Roger mentioned to me that he was thinking of taking up salsa dancing, and would I be interested? And he didn't actually give me a chance to say no, he just seemed to be under the impression that I was coming along, and I didn't want to let him down, it seemed so rude, and even though I was in a state about it, and I actually thought about making an appointment to see Dr. Holden for a prescription for something to calm my nerves, and you girls got so cranky about that, as if I was going to become a crack cocaine addict or something, for heaven's sakes. Just a little Valium was all I was thinking. Which apparently just gives you a lovely floaty feeling. But I couldn't get an appointment. Typical, of course. That new receptionist is so snooty. I do wonder what happened to that lovely Kathy. How long have you been married for? Alice interrupted. The terror of not knowing the facts of her own life gripped her again. She was on one of those amusement park rides that slammed you left, then right, then turned the whole world upside down, giving you unfamiliar glimpses of familiar things. Alice hated amusement park rides. Well, it's coming up to 5 years. You remember the wedding, Alice, of course you do. Madison was flower girl. She looks so adorable in that yellow dress. She looks so nice in yellow. Not many people do. I've bought her a yellow top for Christmas, but whether she'll wear it or not is another matter.
Mum! Said Elizabeth tersely. Alice doesn't even remember Madison. The last thing she remembers is being pregnant with her.
She doesn't remember Madison?
Repeated Barbara in a hushed voice. She took a deep breath and put on a nervous, merry voice as if to jolly Alice out of all this silliness.
Well, I can understand you wanting to forget Madison at this particular moment, the little grumble bum, although I'm sure she'll snap out of it soon. But of course you remember Tom and darling Olivia, don't you? Well, I can't believe I'm asking the question. Of course you do. You can't forget your own children. That would be unthinkable.
There was a tremor of fear in her voice that Alice found strangely comforting. Yes, Mum, this is scary. Yes, this is unthinkable.
Mum, said Elizabeth again, please try and get your head around this. She doesn't remember anything since 1998.
Nothing?
I'm sure it's just temporary. Ah, oh, of course, temporary.
Her mother lapsed into silence and ran a fingernail around the edge of her thickly lipsticked mouth. Alice tried out this new fact in her mind. My mother married my husband's father. It was as unforgettable a fact as I have 3 children... And my husband, whom I adore, has moved out of our house, but somehow she'd forgotten it. None of it could be true.
It must all be an absolutely huge, elaborate, practical joke. It must be an incredibly realistic dream, a vivid hallucination, a nightmare that kept going and going.
Roger!
What could have possessed her sweet, cautious mother to fall madly in love?
Mum never said extravagant things like madly in love with someone like Roger.
Roger, with his overpowering aftershave, his radio announcer voice, and his habit of saying methinks and mayhaps. Roger, who after a few drinks at family parties would pin Alice in a corner and treat her to a monologue all about himself and his eternal fascination with the intricacies of his own personality.
Am I an athletic person?
Yes. Definitely. Am I an intellectual?
Okay, maybe not in the strictest la-di-da PhD sense of the word. But put it another way. Am I an intelligent person? The answer would have to be yes. I've got a PhD from the University of Real Life, Alice. You may well ask, am I a spiritual person? Methinks the answer would have to be yes.
Most certainly.
Alice would be nodding helplessly, taking shallow breaths so she didn't feel sick from the scent of his aftershave, until Nick would appear, saying, "Methinks the lady needs a drink, Dad." And what about Nick? What would he think about this development? He had such a weird, fragile relationship with his father. He imitated him mercilessly behind his back, and there was something close to hatred in his voice when Nick spoke about the way his dad had treated his mother during their divorce. But at the same time, Alice noticed that whenever he was in Roger's company, his voice would become deeper, his shoulders squarer, and he would often casually bring up some big deal he'd negotiated at work or some other accomplishment that Alice didn't even know about, as if deep down he still wanted his dad's approval, even though he would have denied this vehemently, angrily even. Alice couldn't think what his reaction would be to this news. And didn't it mean she and Nick were related? He was her stepbrother. Her first thought was that she and Nick would have laughed themselves silly over that, turned it into a stupid game, made lecherous remarks about incest, and pretended they were Greg and Marcia Brady. But maybe it hadn't been funny at all. He might have been angry on behalf of his mother, even though his mother seemed to treat her ex-husband like a bumbling distant uncle. And what about Nick's sisters, the Flakes? Oh God, the Flakes. Nick's nutty sisters were now her stepsisters. There was no way they would have reacted calmly to this news. They didn't react calmly to anything. They fainted, they sobbed, they stopped talking to each other. They were offended by the most innocuous comments. There was always at least one sister in the middle of a crisis. Alice had never realized family life could be so dramatic until she met Nick's family, with all those sisters, in-laws, boyfriends, aunties, and cousins by the dozen. Her own quiet, polite, mini-sized family had seemed boring and sedate in comparison. Alice said, "Is this why Nick and I are... because he's upset about his dad marrying Mum?" "Of course not," her mother was re-energized. "This divorce is a terrible mystery to all of us, but it's certainly got nothing to do with Roger and me. Roger would be devastated to hear you even thought about such a thing." "Of course, Roger does have his own theories about the divorce," Elizabeth cut in. "Mum and Roger got together years ago. You and Nick were a bit funny about it at the time, and the Flakes were all in hysterics, of course. But it settled down and nobody thinks twice about it now. I promise you, Alice, all these things that seem so shocking aren't really that shocking. When you get your memory back, you'll be laughing at yourself." Alice did not want to get back a self who thought there was nothing shocking about the fact that she and Nick were divorcing. She couldn't believe how casually her mother had referred to the divorce, as if it were something solid and real, as if it were a thing. "Well, I'm not getting a divorce anymore, actually," said Alice. "There is no divorce." "Oh!" Her mother clasped her hands together rapturously as if in prayer. "Oh, but that's wonderful."
"Mum," said Elizabeth,
"you must promise not to say a word about that to Roger or anybody else. She doesn't know what she's saying."
"I do so," said Alice. She felt a bit drunk. "You can tell the whole world, Mum. Tell Roger, tell the Flakes, tell our three children. There is no divorce. Nick and I will work out whatever this thing is."
"Wonderful," cried Barb. "I'm so happy."
"You will not think this is wonderful when you get your memory back," said Elizabeth. "You've got legal proceedings going on. Jane Turner will have heart failure if you start doing this."
"Jane Turner?" said Alice. "What's Jane Turner got to do with the price of fish?"
"Jane is your lawyer," said Elizabeth.
"A lawyer? She's not a lawyer." A memory flitted into Alice's head of some guy losing an argument with Jane at work and saying, "You should have been a lawyer." And Jane had said, "Yes, I'm perfectly aware of that."
"She got her law degree years ago, and now she specializes in divorce," said Elizabeth.
She's helping you, divorce Nick.
Oh, how ridiculous. How stupid that Jane Turner was helping her divorce Nick.
A little Jane goes a very long way.